Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
That's not just the sound of that first sip of Morning Joe. It's the sound of someone shopping for a car on Carvana from the comfort of home.
That's a good blend.
It's time to take it easy, like answering some easy questions to get pre-qualified for a car in minutes.
Talk about starting the morning right.
Just like customizing your terms so your car fits your budget.
Mm-mm-mm.
Visit Carvana.com or download the app to experience car shopping the way it should be. Convenient, comfortable. Ah.
The following podcast is a Dear Media production.
From the offices of Create and Cultivate, this is Work Party, a podcast for women who are redefining the meaning of work on their own terms. In each episode, we tap experts on topics that matter most to the modern working woman, whether you are running the show or working your side hustle. We're bringing in leading female entrepreneurs to share their stories with you. Are you ready to create and cultivate the career of your dreams? Well, welcome to Work Party, the podcast.
Today, we're taking it back to the stage at our Create and Cultivate New York City conference to share a special conversation between actress and activist Amber Heard and Mandana Diana, who is the founder of the amazing voting and civic engagement platform called I Am a Voter. As you're probably well aware, as women, it is a crucial time to get educated and get active in our democracy. As the lead change maker at I Am a Voter, Mandana interviewed Amber about her role as a UN human rights champion and why she's refusing to accept the status quo. Today's episode can also serve as your not-so-subtle reminder to vote, vote, vote. Let's take it to the stage.
Hi, everyone. I'm so honored to host a conversation today about using your platform for good. And I genuinely could not think of anyone more deserving of being celebrated than Amber Heard. Hosting this panel today, my name is Mandana Dayani. I'm the founder of I Am a Voter. And hosting this panel today in front of all of you here about this topic, for an organization I poured my entire heart into, is just like completely surreal. So thank you for being here. And there is nobody that I think is more deserving and better encompasses the courage and the passion and honesty and conviction it takes to fight for justice than Amber Heard. That's true.
Thank you.
Deserves it. Over the past 15 years, she has worked with Syrian refugees, the ACLU, UN Human Rights Office, and the LA Children's Hospital. She has fought for LGBTQ rights, women's rights, family separated at the border, and I may be biased on this one, but the importance of voting and participating in our democracy. I obviously read everything that Amber has said and written in preparation for this, and I found this quote where she said, "We have to continue to use platforms for good when we can, and they can be incredibly galvanizing, engaging, and useful for social movements. For me as an actor, it's not good enough to just be an actor. It's never been good enough to just change my life. I really want to see the world a little bit better than I found it." You seem to know very early on the power of your voice, and you began volunteering at 12 years old and spent mornings before school at a soup kitchen in Austin. How did you realize this passion, and what made you take that first step to just giving back?
Well, I want to start by thanking you because I feel compelled to point out to the audience, mostly filled with women. I see a few allies out there, but, you know, we're women here. And I want to point out you as a human being, as a woman, you continue to blow me away. I've known a lot of lawyers in my life. Unfortunately, I spend a lot more time with them lately than I'd like. But I have to say, as a lawyer, as an activist, as a mover, as a social changer, as a leader, You blow me away. Your humanity, your compassion, your unstoppable force, the fact that you saw a problem and took no answer other than yes. It's just, I'm humbled. Thank you so much for letting me be here. And oh my God, I felt honored thank you. To be invited by you. I have to point that out.
Thank you. And thank you guys all for being here. Seriously, this is awesome. I love you.
So, yeah, I did start early. To be honest, I think it was probably, you know, a requirement. It was a school requirement that I do a certain amount of volunteer hours. It's typical in, like, you know, religious schools or private schools. And in my case, when I was old enough to get back from it, I started working in a soup kitchen. And I think it started to click for me about 12. Like, about 12 years old is when I started seeing the human component of service. My volunteer work has taught me on the ground through the eyes and the direct contact with the people that I was able to, that my time affected. I was able to see the most common element of this kind of work, which is our common shared humanity. That's what compels me to fight to ensure the human rights and dignity of everyone. And I have to say, you know, abstract, you know, policies about politics or, you know, policy debate, they can be wrapped up. Issues of peace and justice can be wrapped up in those kind of vague political debates. But really what connects us all, like our basic needs being met, our basic rights being protected, is undeniable and universal. And I think it just, that activated something in me that was unstoppable. I started going every morning before school. It's one thing to talk about, you know, food deserts or unlivable wages, cyclical poverty, but to see face to face the people that are affected by the consequences of these institutions is a whole other thing. And it taught me, you know, among other things, that there's this element to poverty and these conditions that was lost on me as a relatively privileged white kid who always could get food if I needed it. It taught me that the mistake we make in seeing homelessness is this issue of, character flaw as opposed to the flaw in the institutions, was really humbling and deeply connected me to the sense of and the reward of being on the ground and giving back in real time.
That kind of reminds me a little bit about your work in Syria. You went with the Syrian American Medical Society to visit the largest camp of Syrian refugees. There are about 660,000 refugees amongst the 5.5 million that existed at the time. And you said that that experience left an indelible mark on your soul. And you, after leaving there, did a lot to help some of these children get life-saving treatment that they needed. And I think that you talked a bit about what that taught you about, like, fundamental human rights. Can you just share what that experience was like?
It's interesting because people keep saying to me, whether I'm in refugee camps in the Middle East or I'm, you know, in refugee camps on our border, they keep, like, looking at me. I'm presumably white. At least that's what it looks like. I don't know. And they, like, what do you have to do? Why are you here? This doesn't even, you know, almost by way of, like, complimenting me. And I think it's interesting because it really points out that what may be obvious to all of us, which is if one person's human rights can be violated, that means all of our human rights can be violated. If we live in a world that is unfair, unjust, and even worse, one that we're not willing to fight to change, then that means the same injustices and tragedy that befall groups of people who may not look like you or be your group, it means that same system can abuse you, can take you. You can lose to that same system. And so I can't help but see myself as a part of that community, that place in that community. And I have a position where I can amplify voices of people who have no tongue, no mouth. I can be there to raise awareness to people who are forgotten, and their plight is exacerbated by being forgotten. And I can't think of a more important thing to fight for than our basic human dignity, our basic human rights, and the right to health is one of the most fundamental basic right human rights that we hold. And I think you fight for a world that's better for you, because why wouldn't you? The world that's better for someone else is going to be inherently better for you. And it's not like that right now. It's getting there, and it's improving, but it's improving because we're telling stories, we're engaging, we're motivating, we're acting on things. We have been improving the conditions of humanity since civilization started. And I want to be on that. When down the road, you know, in the future, when someone looks back on this time, I want to be standing on the right side of history and that change. I want to have been
yes.
there.
One of the most common struggles that we hear from our community of small business owners is hiring. Hiring is no joke, and that's why it's one of the largest learning curves for business owners. It's why we're stoked to be partnering again with one of our favorite platforms, LinkedIn.
It's so true. The right hire can make a huge impact on your business. When I first joined Crane Cultivate, we were a small but mighty marketing team, and now we are a rockstar team of five. Our holy grail for hiring is always LinkedIn. We're able to post jobs, look for candidates that might be interested, and with their recruiter features, we can connect directly with women who might be a fit.
But that's not all. As a new member of the Create and Cultivate team, my updated LinkedIn profile has brought us new opportunities for partnerships, speakers, and even contacts that might be interested in working here in the future. I know it's known for being a platform to find jobs, but honestly, the benefits of LinkedIn as an employer and small business team are just as impactful. They are the best when it comes to finding people to work for you, and also finding the best of the best and not just anybody.
And when you need A-plus talent, don't leave finding someone great to chance. I found that LinkedIn is really one of the best resources to go to post your job, to make connections, to grow your career, and discover new job opportunities. Recently, I saw that one of the other teams is going to have a new hire down the pipeline, so I just reached out proactively to a few contacts that fit the bill, and boom, we had a new hire before things even got dire. Honestly, I find joy in searching around and looking at career trajectories and accomplishments of women in our field. Shout out to all the connections I've made by doing that. The Internet Girl Gang is very strong on LinkedIn.
There you have it. LinkedIn is great for new gigs, new contacts, expert partnerships, and of course, for your next dream hire. Today, we're offering Work Party listeners $50 off your first job posting on linkedin.com/workparty.
Go get your hire on and get the support you need. That's linkedin.com/workparty to get $50 off your first job post. Terms and conditions apply.
So I'm going to veer a little bit. I was a lawyer and then I worked in fashion, and I used to work with Rachel Zoe and ran that company for a while. And I remember when I left, I felt so boxed in by that experience. It's just like a term I always use. Like after I left, everyone thought that I was going to talk about fashion all the time, or there was this persona that was created for me from being on this Bravo show. And I didn't know how to reconcile what everyone thought I was with who I knew I was, which is someone who profoundly cared about justice and so many different causes. And I was like, I don't know how to bring these two worlds together. And someone that I profoundly respect looked at me one day and just said, "Who the fuck cares? Just tell your truth." And I was like, oh, that is kind of the permission I needed to get to just be who I was. And I would imagine that is something that you must deal with, which is what the world thinks of you or what the world expects you to be versus who you are and what you care about. And I look here today, and I'm sure many of you have careers and things that you do where you feel like, well, let's actually, how many of you in here, I guess, feel boxed in by your social presence? That like you feel like your audience expects you to talk about being a jewelry designer, or being an entrepreneur, or being a mom. I would love to see hands. It's quite a bit.
Yeah. And I would venture to guess, like, almost everyone in here, especially women. Women are always expected to create a brand, even if you don't have a social media following you earn money from. You have to constantly, as by the time you are 12 years old, you as a woman, know that an implicit apology will be expected of you for how you look. If you look too good, you're too skinny, you're not skinny enough. You're too sexy, not sexy enough. Too old, not old enough. It's always something that you have to, it's like the burden is always on us to, even before social media, we were creating the space to be responsible for how people perceive us being our responsibility. When I was a little girl in school, like I fought in futility for years to boycott against the dress code because I kind of liked my skirt to be slightly, you know, shorter than the average. And I had really skinny legs. And so I was like, let me have this one thing. I want part of my legs to show, you know? And I was told I couldn't because it's not fair to the boys, you know? That's why we couldn't even take our jackets off. And I was like, wait a second. Why is it incumbent on me, the girl, why are you an adult telling me it's incumbent on me to mitigate the responses of how men and young boys behave with me? Why is it not incumbent on them to control their behavior and treat me with dignity and respect and humanity like I deserve? Why is it my job? You know? It's true. It's like, so we're already branding, even before the social media. It's always, you go into an office and you dress a certain way, you go on a date, you have to always be, and you look at the covers of women's magazines and literature, and you'll see them covered with how we please men, how we apply ourselves to men, and that's what we women have been doing for so long, because we're constantly seen through the male gaze, through the male lens. And our nuances of our stories, you're weird, you're smart, your political mind couldn't possibly coexist in this fashion, you know, in this fashion presentation. No, because you know why? An image of that has not been presented to the public.
Of course.
Because it's been told through the male gaze. So we see, you know, hot bitch or threatening bitch, and then we see young girl sexy, and then we see the not threatening best friend, and we see these really narrow archetypes of ourselves, and we don't even have examples of the varied, nuanced, complex, diverse, movable, malleable aspects of the female experience. We don't get to see any representations of those because we haven't been behind the camera or the paintbrush, you know? We haven't been behind the pen telling them. And so the brand is real. The brand that we feel pressure to apply to not lose followers or to be liked on a date or to get a job offer or to be competitive in the workforce. It's something that I think when you ask to show of hands and like four women raise their hands, I think I would argue, wouldn't you, that everybody here knows exactly what those pressures feel like? I sure as hell do. And I just got like social media like a year ago, but I've been running this company.
So all I did for the last year of my life was just tell everyone that like, I need you to vote. I need you to tell everyone to vote. Post this thing. Just tell everyone to vote. And some people were like terrified. I'm like, we're a nonpartisan organization. I'm literally just telling you to post something that says, please register by this day. And that's as non-threatening as it can be. And there was a lot of like, it's not my brand, or I'm scared I'm going to lose followers. I don't know how to deal with the backlash. I guess we've talked about this a little bit, but what would you say to those people?
Wake up! I would just say, look, if it's good enough for you, if you like the way things are right now, and this is good, like you're happy living in a world where it actually takes a considerable amount of your energy and effort and time. If I propose, imagine what you would do tonight if all men had a curfew at 9 p.m., for instance. And you have to think about it, and then you're like, oh, hell, that thought experiment is dark, I know. But if you're happy with that world that you've been living in, you're happy with the way things are, you're happy earning your 60 cents to the dollar, you're happy with everything that you say play out, then don't do anything. You're doing great. But if you want to see it change, let's break it open. Why not? It is so much more valuable to be, I'd much rather, because I find no trouble in finding the unpopular position. Not great at timing.
I'm going to get there.
Yeah, but I don't mean to do it, but what I have learned in that is constantly saying, you know, at the end of the day, I'd rather, when I look back at all the things I'm proud of that I've done, I am proud of my professional accomplishments. Sure, I'm proud of movies. I'm proud of the things I've done. But it is nothing in comparison to the pride I feel for the things I have stood up for because they were right. And not only did I do it because they were right and because they were true, I did it despite what it cost me. And that's like a sort, that's a wealth of pride that gives back to me and will give back to my daughters and my future, their daughters, a million times over. I am proud of what I have done. Sure, I'm proud I did the hard stuff. Because when I've stood up for something that is right despite what it's cost me, it has always made an impact. And it has definitely always upset people. Because only the people that are benefiting from the positions of maintaining the status quo, the positions of power that enjoy the luxury of being in power, those are the opposite of who are incentivized to change it. If you're getting a free ride, why would you bust the car open? You don't want the wheel to pop off. Everyone here, just by the nature of us being mostly, you know, anyone who identifies as a female, you already aren't getting, you're already not in the right seat. You're not enjoying the ride. So, like, why wouldn't we stop? Why wouldn't we break it? Why wouldn't we take the wheels off and stop trying to retrofit it into a system that we're not happy with? I would rather lose followers. I'd rather be unpopular. I would rather go down for being who I am than to be popular for something I'm not. Wouldn't you? Yes. Yes. So yes. Lose the followers. You'll get a lot more. Trust me. You'll get a lot more.
And that was kind of what we all saw with Nike this year, which was how incredible it was to see an iconic brand just do the right thing and not care about the consequences and then just explode and grow so much from it. And I think that was like a beautiful example for everyone else.
I think disruption always makes, it always causes a lot of noise, you know, crazy screams loudest. And I think it just, people will always be upset when you disrupt the status quo. But like I said, unless you think things are great and you enjoy all the privileges of how things are right now, then do something. You got to say something. And actually now we have the most power. We have with the power in your hands right now, you have more power. We're a generation, daughters of a generation of equality. And we really have inherited too much to accept anything less than that. It is our burden to push it forward even more because we have the power. All of us are connected and we are part of an increasingly loud, interconnected global community that will take nothing short of justice. Yes!
Hey ladies, listen up. We've got a new vitamin that's perfect for women on the go. Between meetings and unanswered emails, sometimes our health can take a backseat as women. That's why I really am a big fan of Ritual. Honestly, like when I started 2019, I wanted to make sure that I put my health as a priority, and Ritual has been a huge help as it relates to that. It allows me to get all the nutrients that I need in these two power-packed vitamins that I take on the go. I can take it in my car, I can take it in between meetings, I can put it in my purse, and it's not too much of a hassle for me, which is honestly what we need now. Being so like busy here at Create and Cultivate, always creating different campaigns, and we're revving up for our new conference and our summit. So this is honestly like one of the best things that I've been able to implement during my time at Create and Cultivate, and it allows me to just really be healthy and alert and get all the vitamins that I know that I'm not taking and I know that I need, but it just takes the hassle of going to the store and having to pick all of those out away from me, so I can just order it online. It's really easy to take. There are two capsules that are less than $1 a day. And honestly, like we spend so much money on coffee and going out to eat that it only costs $1 a day to put your health as a priority. It's a win-win situation. And honestly, what I love most about Ritual is the fact that it's simple to order. You can cancel it at any time. But also, you're not going to want to cancel this because it's so great. You're going to want to like always order and make sure that you're not missing a month because it's super convenient. So better health doesn't happen overnight. And right now, Ritual is offering our listeners 10% off during their first 3 months. So fill in the gaps in your diet and take advantage of this offer. Visit ritual.com/party to start your subscription today. That's 10% off at ritual.com/party.
We talked a little bit about when you came out to your family. about being in love with a woman and about, you know, I think it was the 2010 GLAAD Awards or anniversary event. And you said you wanted to offer young people someone to look up to and that maybe thanks to you, someone else would feel more safe being who they are and more honest about it and feel less inadequate. And you said that a lot of people warned you not to do that. They said it was going to...
Not one person said this is going to be okay.
And it was going to be really hard for your career. And, yeah. I mean, what made you decide to not heed their advice and to just not agree with them?
Chelsea, just to clarify, I didn't come out at that event. It's just labeled... I mean, it's kind of distributed in the media that way, I think maybe because it's more digestible. But I never came out. I was never in. But I did, like any actor, I slowly started, you know, people started paying attention more and more and more to me and taking pictures of my personal life or unplanned events. And people just started to care as I started to work more in this industry. And I was in this time, at the same time, again, great with timing, falling madly in love with a beautiful woman with whom I am very close to this day and have tremendous amount of respect and love for. But as I see that this is increasingly problematic as people in my life are telling me, you're a romantic lead, you can't do this, blah, 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 list all the reasons why you can imagine, and some probably are not obvious, but they listed a lot of reasons and said, no one else has done it. If you're so sure this can work and you won't lose your career, name one actress who's working that has, who is working. And I couldn't think of anyone. I couldn't find anyone. There was not one. And then I realized why I had zero representations. I had zero, like, role models in that capacity. Why it was something that I never knew could be a positive thing, because I grew up in the South in a conservative part of Texas. You know, how would I think that this part of me that didn't feel wrong was really wrong? But I had no positive examples. The same in my industry. They told me, name one example of it working out. And I couldn't think of one, and I was like, damn. And I thought about the young me. I was like, well, that's why I have to do it. That's why I can't be in. And everyone said, oh, just say it's your private life. It's private life. What am I going to do when I walk out? Which happened to me, actually, walking out of a salon, and my ex picks me up, and we're holding hands walking down the parking lot, and normally that's a normal thing no one would care about. You know, I wasn't used to people jumping out of bushes and taking pictures of me, but it sometimes happened. And that happened, and I see this photographer, and we're walking hand in hand, and I went, in my head, I thought, shit, drop it. You know, I thought that, but I just couldn't. I couldn't, like, connect. I couldn't let go. And more people started noticing, but because I looked the way I looked, people didn't actually... They wouldn't believe it. They didn't actually suspect it on a big level. And then someone asked me at that event, that was a female focused media outlet. They asked me, "Is that true that that's your girlfriend?" And I said, "Yeah, actually it is." And they said, "To be clear, we're asking you if it's your girlfriend, like you live together, but like not as friends." And she's like shaking, and I was like, "Yeah, no, she's right there." I mean, otherwise it'd be kind of weird. She would be stalking me. She's like taking pictures behind the scenes. And I just spoke from the heart. I just spoke candidly. She was like, why are you doing this? Why? What are you saying right now? This is, you know. And I just spoke from the heart in that moment about not having representation. Because I know that visibility is crucial. That's what we've seen in the wake of these social movements that have so transformed our country and the world, is that... The value is in the voicing of it. The value is in the connection that we form when we hear other people say, I too, me too. Yes, me too. And the immense community and power we get from building that community is in its own self the worth. That's how we change. When we collectively act, we steadily and collectively act, we can impart dramatic social change. And we have seen our world shift dramatically solely from our adoption and respect of visibility. We have come out of the closets. We have come forward out of the dark. We have connected to one another, and we're saying we're allowed. We're here. This happened. This is real. And we want to change a world that gives respect to survivors, that believes survivors, and where we can address this so that we can make a safer space for us to push the conversation even further, and that we can be even more safe and even more collected, even more engaged. Because we are a part of this vast army of voices that are increasingly not accepting the silence. So visibility, whether it is, you know, you as an out person, or you as a proud trans woman, or you as a male survivor, whatever, we need to voice our opinions. We need to stand up and we need to speak out, because that's how attitudes change and that's how a culture will shift. And like I said before, like, unless you're happy with the way things are right now.
Did you actually suffer any consequences when that happened? I'm actually curious.
Have
I don't
you
think
used
I asked
Google?
Well, on that front, well,
I mean, clearly not. You are. Well, you had this incredible career, and
but in part because I refuse to accept the status quo people put on me. Like you, after your show, you're refusing to accept the box that other people established for you. And part of how you do that is you redefine what the walls of the box are made out of. It's true. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm somebody who's obviously suffered the full force of the wrath of our culture. When a woman or a survivor speaks up against a more powerful force, I have seen that firsthand. From death threats to harassment to bullying to invasions of my privacy to threats to my career, my livelihood, my safety, and yet I'm still here. I'm here because I refuse to accept those be the terms of my silence. I refuse to accept that those be the terms that other people who are in positions of power that seek to maintain the status quo have set for me. I refuse to stand in line.
It can work.
It will work. And it will work as long as you stand up for what's right and speak your truth. You know, if you're quiet, you'll be ignored. That's how this has gone on for so long in so many different ways. Look at the tremendous amount of change that has happened on just the LGBTQIA front. I mean, when I was out and it made a splash, it was what, 2007 or 8 or something. The landscape from then to now, when I was the only working actress doing this that I even heard of, to now where it's not even like people don't even care. You know, like the younger generations are like, oh, you were?
Amazing.
Anyway. You know, it's like, that's tremendous.
That's progress, and it takes time, and it requires people
standing up
and speaking. What are some parting words for this group? I mean, you have an audience here of really ambitious and really engaged and really powerful women. And I guess I want to know what you want them to know. Like, what's the last thing you want to say to this group of people?
Well, I would say I know that it can sometimes be overwhelming, you know, with the increased connection that we all have. We have an increased awareness of the world's injustices and almost what it would appear to be insurmountable problems. But as I said before, we are an army of voices that have been silenced so long. You right now are sitting, and we among you are standing shoulder to shoulder, and we comprise a vast army of voices that could change the world. With the interconnectedness that we all share right now, with the platforms and the power you have, you legitimately, look at Tarana Burke. In 2006, Tarana Burke, who founded the Me Too movement, in 2006, she couldn't have possibly imagined 11 years ago what that could mean, what the impact that could have. All of us with our platforms, our power, our hashtags, we don't know who's watching us or who we could affect. But one day, your daughter, your little cousin, younger person, someone else other than you, perhaps someone older than you that has not had the privilege of being able to speak out about things because they come from a different time, is going to be affected by the positive change, the difference that you make. They will be affected by it. They will be affected by your actions. So you just have to choose which side of history do you want to be on. Are you going to do that with your enormous, tremendous power and platforms, that which is good or not?
For that which is silent, right?
Yep.
We are so grateful to you for your passion and your commitment to justice. And all of you guys here. All of you, thank you for being here. Thank you for listening to this critically important work that Amber has been doing. And please, for the love of God, register and vote this year, next year, every year, local elections, national elections. Please, please, please vote. Thank you guys so much. Thank you, Amber. Thank you.
Ladies, self-care is big business. While we're working harder than ever before, we're also working to take care of ourselves along the way, and we're willing to spend big bucks to do so. At Create and Cultivate's first ever self-care summit, we'll be exploring the world of self-care, from the business of wellness to how the modern working woman turns off and disconnects after a long week in the office. If you're ready for a day of panels, keynotes, pop-ups, crystal readings, meditation sessions, and so much more, everything you know and love from Create and Cultivate, head over to createcultivate.com to grab your tickets for the first ever self-care summit in Los Angeles on July 20th. We'll see you there.
Have you bought your copy of Work Party the Book? Part career manifesto, part practical business advice, Work Party the Book is everything I wish I knew during my early years as an entrepreneur. The ups, the downs, the things I learned and the women that helped me to make it happen. Just like in our podcast, Work Party the Book does not shy away from the nitty-gritty details you need to know. If you hope to start your own business or become the HBIC at your current gig, we're here to help you out. Available in hardcover and audiobook on Amazon, also on iBooks at Target and your local bookstore. Thanks for tuning in to this episode of Work Party, the podcast. If you felt inspired and learned something new, let us know in a review on iTunes and check us out on social at Work Party. For every episode, we have downloadable resources available on workparty.com so you can put these tips and tools into action for your own business. Thanks again for listening. And as always, work hard, party on.